Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Chet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing the question as to when mitzvot begin and where their application is. We had with regards to Chadash, two opinions. One possibility, B'chol Moshe V'techem, means that Chadash applies anywhere that you are found. That means Chadash is Chayav, not only in Eretz Yisrael, but also in Chutz La'aretz. In addition to that, it would mean that Chadash was applicable immediately upon entering into Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, the other opinion was, B'chol Moshe V'techem came to teach you, Moshav was only after Kibush V'chiluk. So we saw, according to the opinion that said that Chodosh has application everywhere, and it begins immediately upon when you entered Eretz Yisrael, then we can understand the psukim in Yoshua, which is, V'yochumi avur aretz v'machrata Pesach, that they ate from the produce of the land on the next day after Pesach, V'machrata Pesach achul mikara lo achul. Then after Pesach they began to eat. Before that they did not eat. Alma akruv omer v'hadar achul. They brought the omer and then they began to eat because it was chodosh was applicable immediately, and therefore they needed the omer on the 16th of Nisan to be matir the produce that was there. Elamando amar lachar yirusha v'yishiva. According to the one who says that b'chol Moshe v'techem does not mean anywhere that you're found, but rather only after kibush v'chiluk. Then, Nechol the altar. What were they doing? Waiting for the produce until the 16th of Nisan, until Mimacharat Pesach, when they could have eaten immediately. So Gemara says, Lo Avitzrichi, they didn't need to eat it. They didn't need the Chodosh, because they had produce, or they had leftovers from the Mun, we're going to see in 1 second. And therefore, they were not required, or didn't have the necessity for eating. Before that point in time, Enoch and Ami, they could have eaten before that time. They just didn't need it. Now, that does raise the issue, and we discussed it a little bit at the end of yesterday's shiur, exactly what they did make the matzah out of. Even if they didn't need it, the matzah shouldn't have been made out of mun, or it's unlikely that it should have been made out of mun, and therefore you would have to find produce to make it out of. So the question is, what did they use in terms of produce? Right, so they didn't grow wheat in the midbar, so the only choice was from the produce of the land. So seemingly they would have needed the produce of the land for the matzot. That's applicable both according to the first day'ah that we saw before and this day'ah. What exactly did they use for the matzot? We discussed the Balei HaTosafot yesterday, the possibility of aseh docholot aseh, and that the first kezayit might have been mutar. But that is a question that remains open, is exactly what did they make the matzot out of that year. But it says, Dichtiv, ubnei Yisrael achlu et aman 40 shana. Says in Parshat Bishalach, when it talks about the mun, the end of the Parshia there, it says, the Bnei Yisrael ate the mun for 40 years, ad bo'am el eretz noshavet. Then until the point when they reached settled land, et aman achlu ad bo'am el ktze eretz kanan. They ate the mun until they reached the edge of Eretz Kanan. Yev shalomar ad bo'am el eretz noshavet, can't say until they reached settled land or civilization, because it already says on the edge of Eretz Canaan. The way Rashi interprets this is, Eretz Noshavet is Eretz Yisrael. That is the land that is greater in Kedusha than that of Sichon and Og, and therefore that's called Eretz Noshavet. Eretz Sichon and Og is called Tzei Eretz Canaan. It's the edge or the beginning of Eretz Canaan because they're right on the Yardane, on the border where Eretz Canaan begins. Tosafot brings the exact opposite interpretation. It says that Eretz Sichon and Og are known as Eretz Noshavet because they sit on the edge of the Midbar. They're the first civilization after you exit the Midbar. So they're called Eretz Noshavet. Say Eretz Canaan is exactly what it means, the edge of Eretz Canaan, when you entered into Eretz Canaan. It says the term Eretz Canaan is only used specifically about the territory west of the Yardane, not to the east of the Yardane. And therefore Tosafot sees the Stira just the opposite. The outcome is the same, it's just which is Eretz Noshavet and which is Ketzei Eretz Kanan. So you have Shalomar El Ketzei Eretz Kanan, you can't say they ate it until Ketzei Eretz Kanan, Sherek Varnei Marad Boam El Eretz Noshavet, until they reached settled land. HaKetzad, how do you resolve this stira, which seemingly is they only had mon until Eretz Sichon and Og, but they seemingly had mon all the way until Eretz Kanan or Eretz Yisrael? The Marad explains, V'shiva V'adar Meit Moshe. Moshe passed away on the 7th of Adar, Basak Man Milireid. And the mun stopped coming down. Based on the Gemara and Megillah, it says, Shalosh Matanot Tovot, they knew the Israel, that there were three gifts given to Bnei Israel in the Midbar, B'schut, Shloshet Parnasim, because of the three leaders, But there it says that the man came down b'schut Moshe, that the Be'er Mayim came b'schut Miriam, and the Anani HaKavod came b'schut Aaron. And as Miriam and Aaron passed away, we lost some of those items, and then they came back b'schut Moshe. But the man is clearly associated with the b'schut of Moshe. And here you have it that when Moshe passed away, the man stopped coming down. But that man that they stored up from that day, they were able to use until the 16th of Nisan. So that's unusual in a number of ways. First of all, the man itself only lasted for a day and went bad, normally. Here, it lasted beyond that period of time. Number two is the man that came down. It didn't matter how much you took or you stored, you always ended up with the same quantity. Obviously, over here, you ended up with more quantity. Or, simply that, whichever man was in their basket, as they took it out, it replenished itself and it never ran out. But that man, the Shibik Lehem, lasted them until the 16th of Nisan. So that's the answer to the question, which is, even according to the one who says that Chodosh was not Asur until after Kibush V'chiluk, which means that Chodosh was fine to eat, why did they wait until Macharat Pesach? Because they didn't need anything until the 16th of Nisan. The mon lasted them until the 16th of Nisan. They only needed food at that point in time. Tosafot over here asks a question, an interesting question. He says, why doesn't the Gemara just go to the Pasuk in Yoshua? Pasuk in Yoshua says explicitly, V'im tomar, amaylo meipik leikula milta behedje dichtiv, v'yishpot haman mimacharat ha-Pesach. The Pasuk in Yoshua says that the mon stopped the day after Pesach. And therefore they had no more man. The Gemara here is trying to figure out when it stopped all of the calculations of the man and it lasted for 30 days. The Pasuk in Yoshua is explicit. The man stopped the day after Pesach. So until that point in time, it's clear that they had the man. The Pasuk gives an interesting answer. He says that the Gemara is trying to look at it or find it in the Torah, rather than finding it in the Navi, even though the Navi is explicit that they ate until Mimacharat Pesach, that they ate the man until the 16th of Nisan. The Ibnei Yeshua suggests an interesting answer. He says, from the Pasuk in Yeshua, it's not clear what it means that they had man until the 16th of Nisan. As far as the Pasuk in Yeshua is concerned, it sounds like the man fell until the 16th of Nisan. I mean, the 15th of Nisan was the last day the man fell. What we're explaining is that the man stopped by Eva Moshe, and then they had man that was left over until the 16th of Nisan. Maybe that's what the Gemara was after. It wasn't after the fact that it stopped by the 16th of Nisan. That we know already because the Pasuk in Yoshua tells us. What they want to know is, how did they have man during that period of time? According to Pasuk in Yoshua, it sounds like they had man falling from the sky. The answer is, no, that they had it b'kleihem. And that only comes out from the Psukim in the Torah. And maybe that's why there was emphasis on finding it in the Pesukim in the Torah, even though you have an explicit Pesuk in Yoshua, because that doesn't explain to you what happened. And here the Gemara is after what happened. Tanya Yidach, we have another Braita. B'nei Yisrael achu at aman 40 shana, v'chi 40 shana achlu, did they really eat it for 40 years? Alo 40 shana chaser 30 yom achlu. Isn't it 40 years minus 30 days? Meaning that they only started to eat it on the 16th of Iyar. The Torah tells us that the Parshiot in Bishalach take place on the 15th of Iyar. And then on the next day, the man starts to come down, which is the 16th of Iyar. If the man continued for them, at least what we just said in the previous rite, until the 15th of Nisan, and then on the 16th of Nisan they needed food, that means that it lasted minus a month. Because they started on the 16th of Iyar, and then it finishes on the 15th of Nisan. They're missing 30 days there. That already the man began when they left Mitzrayim, which is that for those 30 days, or the first 30 days from the 15th of Nisan when they left until the 15th of Iyar, the matzot that they took out tasted like man. So that has how they had it for 40 years. It's an interesting question in general because the Torah itself says about Bnei Yisrael's wandering in the Midbar, or the cause of their wandering because of the Miraglim, that it was 40 years. But we know that the Chet HaMiraglim only takes place in the second year, despite the fact that it calls it 40 years. So we see that terminology is used as a round number in general for 40 years. So it's interesting that the Gemara itself asks about the Mon, that it lasted for 40 years. It might be because it's specifically associated with the Mon when they got it. It says it lasted for 40 years. to the time that they got it, it's saying that it's going to last for 40 years. And we know for sure that it didn't last for 40 years, whether that is because it stopped when Moshe passed away, or even if it lasted afterwards until the 50th Nisan, it never gets to the 40 years. And the Gemara is bothered by that because it's talking about the miracle of the month. If it's talking about the miracle of the month, it should have been more exact about the years, especially since it's already into the 41st year. By the time that they are having the month stop, it's already past Rosh Chodesh Nisan or past Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. In either instance, you're already into the 41st year. So you should have said in the 41st year if you wanted to round it rather than the 40th year. Right, Tani Yidach, we have another Braita, which is a famous Braita. B'shiva ba'adar mit Moshe. Moshe passed away on the 7th of Adar. U'b'shiva ba'adar nulad. He was also born on the 7th of Adar. Minayin shibishiva ba'adar meit. How do you know that he died on the 7th of Adar? Shnemar, vayama tasham Moshe eved Hashem. So it says that Moshe passed away at a hard Nevo. Uchtiv, vayivku b'nei Yisrael Moshe barvot Moab 30 yom. And it says there that b'nei Yisrael mourned Moshe in the Arvot Moab for 30 days. Uchtiv. And then it says in Yoshua, Vayi achrei mot Moshe ved Hashem, that after Moshe passed away, Hashem comes to Yoshua and says, Uchtiv, Moshe avdi meit, v'ata kum avur. And it says, now that my servant Moshe has passed away, I want you to cross the Yarden. Uchtiv. Ivru b'kerav ha-machaneh, v'tzivu at ha-am le'mor, hechinu lechem tzeda, k'beot shloshet yamim, Atem ovrim et ha-Yarden. Because in 3 days, you are going to cross the Yarden. It tells Yoshua to tell the people to prepare themselves for 3 days, because in 3 days, we're going to cross the Yarden. Uchtiv, v'am alu min ha-Yarden, basor l'chodesh ha-Rishon. Says that the Am exits the Yarden on the 10th of the first month, on the 10th of Nisan. And amazingly, today is the 10th of Nisan. So we know when they crossed the Yarden. We know that Moshe died before, and we have two series of time before that. We have the 30 days of Yemi Evel B'chi Moshe, and we have the 3 days of preparing to cross the Yarden. Tosfot over here discusses how exactly these 3 days work out, because there are two times that 3 days are mentioned, once by Hashem to Yoshua, and then once by Yoshua to the Am, and they're expressed differently. So Tosfot here tries to reconcile how those 3 days are enumerated, or how they lay out those 3 days in order to get to this 33 days going back to Zayin Adar. Seimehem shloshim b'shlosha yamim, that's 33 days. Lima freya, if you look backwards, retroactively 33 days. Alamato, you see from this, shibishiv'a b'adar meit Moshe, that on the 7th of Adar, Moshe passed away. So now, in terms of doing the math, Adar before Nisan is always chaser, it's only 29 days. So in counting the 33 days, you have to count the 10th itself as well. Meaning that there are 3 days and 30 days. If you count from the 10th of Nisan, which as Rashi says over here, then you take 10 days from Nisan itself. And then you'll need 23 days backwards in Adar. So Adar only has 29 days. So that's the 29th will count. And then 23 days backwards is the 7th of Adar. So it counts the day itself. You have to count the 10th itself as well as the 7th. And then you'll get 33 days from the time that Moshe passed away until they crossed the Yarden. But that's how we know that he died on 7th of Adar. Uminayin shibishiva ba'adar nolad Moshe. How do we know that Moshe was born on the 7th of Adar? Shenamar v'yomer lehem. Moshe says to Bnei Yisrael, Ben me'av esrim shana anochi hayom. I am 120 years today. Lo uchal od latzeit v'lavo. Shein tam lomar hayom. What does it mean today that I'm 120 years old? Matam lomar hayom. Lameid shakodesh baruch hu yoshev umemalei shnoteim shal tzadikim miyom liyom mechodesh tochodesh. Hashem sits and fills in the years of the tzadikim from day to day, from month to month. Shneamar et mispar yamecha amalei. The days of your life I will fill out. And that means that Moshe filled out his years, meaning that he lived exactly 120 years. He was born on Zayin Adar, and he passed away on Zayin Adar. Tanya, Reb Shimon bar Yochai omer, Shlosh mitzvot nitzavu Yisrael b'knisatan la'aretz. There are 3 mitzvot which are triggered upon Bnei Yisrael's entry into the land. Noagot ben ba'aretz ben b'chutz la'aretz. But they have this unusual character, which is they only are triggered when you enter into Eretz Yisrael, yet they are not tluyot ba'aretz. They don't end up being uniquely associated with Eretz Yisrael. They apply worldwide. V'adin shin hagu. And it makes sense that that's the case. Umachadosh, Shein Yisro, Yisro Olam, Chodosh, which is one of those mitzvot. So what's clear here is that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai believes that when it says b'chol moshevotechem in the pasuk by Chadash, that means anywhere in the world. That's why it's triggered immediately upon entry into Eretz Yisrael, because he doesn't learn moshevotechem means achar kibush vechiluk. He learns moshevotechem to mean anywhere that you live. So there, ma chadash shein yusuro isur olam. Chadash is not a permanent isur. It's an isur that lasts for a certain amount of time, and then it's released. Ve'ein isuro isur hana'a. And the isur that's associated with chadash is only an isur achila. It's not an isur hana'a, because you're allowed to use the chadash for animal feed. You're allowed to use it for certain things prior to its crossing over the Omer. Ve'esh heter li'isuro. And his ability to release its isur. The way Rashi learns this is that ein isuro isur olam means it's not a permanent isur, is because after the 16th of Nisan, you can eat the chadash. So because of that, it is not an isur olam. On the other hand, heter li isuro is by the zman beit hamikdash, when the mikdash was extant and you brought the korban haomer, then the korban haomer would be matir the chadash earlier in the day. So therefore, even on the day of Isuro, you have heter li Isuro. That's the way Rashi learns it. The problem with Rashi's pshat, aside from some of the major issues that the Rabbeinu Tam discusses, is that only follows one of the opinions in the Gemara and Menachot. There are other opinions in Gemara and Menachot, when there's no Omer, that the morning of the 16th, Heri Mizrach, as soon as the dawn breaks on the 16th, that the Chadash is Mutar. This assumes that without the Omer, the Chadash is also all day of the 16th until sunset. And then, when you have the Omer, you back it up, and you make a Hetel Isuro. Again, that only follows the one opinion in the Gemara in Menachot, and therefore, there are alternate interpretations of what is Yesh Heter Li Isuro. The most prevalent, or the easiest one to understand, is somewhat along the lines of Rashi, which is Yesh Heter Li Isuro means that the same object that is Asur becomes Mutar. The Chodosh, which is the Tvua Chadashah, which is itself Asur, becomes mutar. You can eat that same grain that was once a sur, you can eat. Which is not true. We're going to see in a second by kilayim v'orla. So that's the easiest way to explain it. The alternate explanations here that are brought by the Balei HaTosafot are, one is the Rabbeinu Yom Tov, perish to b'orla mamash kamar, yesh heter li'isuro v'achi perisho. Yesh heter li'grom isur lo notam. You're allowed to generate the isur, which means that by chadosh, and we're going to see in a second, by Orla, you're allowed to plant a tree and cause Orla to come to the world. You're allowed to plant grain and have Chodosh come to the world. You're not allowed to plant Kilayim because it's an Isur. So Surin Isurim, Yesh Heter Li Isuro, you're allowed to create the Isur. In certain instances, you're not allowed to create the Isur. Some Isurim are a derivative of what you do, but there's nothing wrong with what you do. Other Isurim are problematic because you creating the Isur, and that itself is a problem. And then we have an alternate view, the fourth view of what Yesh Heter Li Isuro is. Rav Moshe Mipontaizo, Farish to Ola Yesh Heter Li Isuro Yedei Beitin. That Beitin has the ability to create a heter to the Isur of Chodosh, as well as that of Orla, because they can be Ma'aber the Shana, or Ma'aber the Chodosh, make the Chodosh Chaser. So the act of Beitin determines the duration of the Isur. Because by Chodosh, you need the 16th of Nisan. So whatever Beit Din does, it can actually move the day and make the day actually a day of Heter rather than a day of Isur. Orla has 3 years, and Tu Bishvat is the determining factor. So that Tu Bishvat, they can move the date, meaning that they have flexibility within the calendar, and therefore the date of Heter can come about. Kilayim is not subject to the calendar. So that's Yesh Heter Li Isuro. So those are five different explanations as to what Yesh Heter Li Isuro is. Based on which explanation you have will determine the next couple lines of the Gemara, which is, the case by Chadash is, number one, Ein Yisuro Yisur Olam. Ein Yisuro Yisur Hana'a, V'yesh Heter Li Isuro. Noheg ben Baretz ben Bechutz Aretz. It's applicable both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Aretz. Kilayim She Isuran Yisur Olam. Kilayim is a permanent Isur. It's not an Isur that goes away at any time. Kilayim is always a Isur. Isuran Isur Hana'a. We're talking about Kilayim that is Isur Hana'a, so we're obviously talking about Kilay HaKerem, because Kilay HaKerem are not only Asur Ba'achila, they're Asur Ba'ana'a, because of the Pasuk says, Pentikdash, because maybe you'll make it Kodesh, that's the way Rashi explains it over here, Loshon HaKdesh, But as everybody points out, that's not the mainstream view of the drasha. You look at Nun Vav Amud Bet in the Masechta, we're going to see that the main drasha is Pentu Kadesh, because maybe you'll have to burn it, because that's the what happens to Yisrei Anah, is you have to burn them. But the idea being that there is a restriction of Anah, Ve'ein Heter Li'Isuran, and there's no Heter Li'Isuran. So all the different definitions that we had by Ein Heter Li'Isuran, now we'll say by Kilayim. Number one, it's not mutar to generate kilaya kerem. So that's one heter li'isuro. According to Rashi's interpretation that on the day itself, the 16th, you can create heter li'isuro. That's not true by kilayim. According to those explanations that say that the object itself will become mutar. Kilaya kerem never becomes mutar. According to those explanations that baiting can affect the calendar and it'll affect the isur here. Kilei Kerem has nothing to do with the calendar. So therefore, Beit Din can't have any effect on the Isur. So because of all those, Kilei Kerem has all three of these items that are more chamur than Chadash. Inudin, Shenugu, Ben Ba'aretz, Ben B'chutz La'aretz. Certainly, it should have application both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz and be immediately relevant when they enter into Eretz Yisrael. V'hu Adin L'Orla B'shtayim. And Orla has two of these to make the Kal V'chomer. It is more chamur than chadash in two areas. So, of course, in terms of isur hana'ah, it's clearly more chamur. The other question is it isuro isuro olam, or ein heter l'isuro that it's also different by orla? Depends on whose shita you're following over here. Truth is that ein isuro isuro olam is because orla only lasts for 3 years. In the fourth year, the fruits are mutarim. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam doesn't like that explanation because when you say Ein Yisuram Yisur Olam, it's talking about the object itself. When you're talking about Chadash, the object itself is not an Yisur Olam. When you're talking about Kilei Kerem, the object itself is Osir forever. When you're talking about Orla, the fruits that are Orla are Osir forever. It happens to be the fruits produced by the tree the next year are Mutarim. So that's not an Yisur, it is an Yisur Olam. I mean, the Orla is always remains Asur and never changes. So therefore, he thinks that maybe the difference between them is Ein Heter Li Yisuro, which is what we discussed before. That depending on what you think Ein Heter L'Yisuro is, according to Rashi, Ein Heter L'Yisuro doesn't apply by Orla, because you can never make it mutar in the time period that it's Asur. But Ein Yisuram Yisur Olam by Orla is similar to Chadash, which is not a permanent Isur, because there's a point in time where the Orla will become mutar. Again, the Rabbeinu Tam's criticism of that is that that's not about the same fruits. It's about the same tree, but not about the same fruits. So you could argue for Rashi that Rashi is focused on the tree, not on the fruits. This tree will produce fruits that are mutar at a certain point. But rather those go to the other explanations we saw of Ein Heter L'Yisuro. So in Ein Heter L'Yisuro, we could see that Orla has some of those trappings based on the other explanations of Ein Heter L'Yisuro. One of them was that Beit Din can change the date and that will affect the Isur. That's true by Orla. By Orla as well, Beit Din can change the date, and Tu B'Shvat is the determining factor for when you switch from Orla into Heter or Reva'ai, and therefore there is Heter the Isuro. The other possibility is that it's Mutar to plant the item, that's Rabbeinu Yom Tov, and you can create Orla. There's no Isur in creating Orla. You're allowed to plant the tree and have it become Orla, so that's Mut. So that means there is Heter the Isuro. According to the explanation that Heter li'isuro means this object itself will become mutar. That is not true. So the Rabbeinu Tam then offers an alternative there that we're talking about the Revai. We're actually talking about the Orla in the fourth year, where it's Revai. Revai has a deemed din as Maiser Sheni, it needs to be brought up to Yerushalayim, or you have to redeem it. What he says is, Yesh Heter li'isuro is the fact that once you've redeemed it, it becomes mutar. The same fruit that was Asur be Riv'ai becomes Mutar after you redeem it. So Yesh Heter L'Yisuro by Orla. Orla's not referencing the Isur Orla itself, but rather the fourth year, Riv'ai, which is the year after the Orla. Right, so the problem, obviously, with the Rabbeinu Tam's Shita is that it should have said Riv'ai instead of Orla. But here you had a slew of explanations of Ein Heter L'Yisuro, and a number of them can be the one that's missing by Orla, to say that Orla is similar to Chadosh. Again, Rashi thinks that Orla is Ein Heter L'Yisuro, and thinks that it's Asur Banad. He says Ein Yisuro Yisuro Olam. It's not a permanent Yisur, because in the fourth year it becomes Mutar. Those are differences. At least Orla has two of these three aspects where it's more Chamor than Chadash, and therefore you have a Kal V'Chomer. that if Chadosh is immediately applicable when you enter Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact that it's connected to the entrance to Eretz Yisrael, it's still Asur Bechutz Laretz, meaning that it applies all over the world. So too the din of Kilei Akerem, so too the din of Orla, according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Tosfot asks over here, why don't we ask by Tevel, Truma, Maser, they also should be a Kam Bechomer Mei Chodosh, that there should be no like Ben Baretz and Ben Bechutz Laretz, or use a Mem Matzino, how come they're not included over here? So Tosfot gives two answers as to why they're not included. Either because Truma and Maser, Yeshtam B'Sheila, you have the ability to unwind the Isur, which is not true by Chodosh or by any of these other items, because you could go be Matir, quote unquote Neder, with the Chacham, and then you could remove the status of Truma or Maser. Or he says, because there's a difference in how the Isur is created. By the case of Orla, Chodosh, and Kilaya Kerem, those are Isurim that are generated naturally. They are a byproduct or an outcome of planting and the item growing. On the other hand, when it comes to Truma Maser, that is an Isur that is Bayidei Maser. It's an action that you must take in order for the Isur to be in effect or for it to come about. You need Miruach HaKri. You need to flatten out the pile at the end of the processing in order to make them Chayavim in Truma Maser, to make it Tevel, and then to remove the Truma Maser. All of that is done through Maase Adam. So the generation of the Isur is different. And so because of that, we would not make it a Kal V'chomer for Chodosh, because it's not even the same category or the same nature of Isur as Chodosh. Rabbi Elazar be Rabbi Shimon, his son, argues on him. Omer, Kol mitzvah shenitzavu Yisrael kodem knisatan la'aretz, any mitzvah that was commanded to Bnei Yisrael before they entered into the land of Israel, noheged ben baretz, ben b'chutz la'aretz. It applies both in Eretz Yisrael and in chutz la'aretz. L'char knisatan la'aretz, something that only comes into effect after they enter into Eretz Yisrael, and noheged en el ba'aretz. It's only applicable inside of Eretz Yisrael. So you see Rashi over here. Kol mitzvah shenitzavu Yisrael, v'anihiga kodem shikansu la'aretz. That it was applicable before they entered into Eretz Yisrael, dainu chuvat aguf. That's by definition why it's a chovat aguf. Noheged ben baretz, ben bechutz laretz. Then it applies everywhere. By the mere fact that Eretz Yisrael is not the trigger for the mitzvah, shows you that it is a chovat aguf. And since it's a chovat aguf, it applies both bechutz laretz or in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, if the mitzvah is only triggered by entrance into Eretz Yisrael, then by definition is basically a mitzvah hatzluya baretz. And if that's the case, it will only apply in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz Laretz. So that's all the cases that we just mentioned here. Chodosh, Kilei Akerem, and Orla only have application once you enter into Eretz Yisrael. They only have application once they enter into Israel, then it's limited to mitzvot Tzliyot Baretz. It becomes a mitzvah Tzliyot Baretz. Now again, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon does not worry about whether it says Moshe Botechem, no matter what the language is. He's not worried about the language. He simply makes a distinction as to when the mitzvah is effective. The mitzvah is effective prior to entering into Eretz Yisrael, it's a mitzvah aguf. If it's effective after you enter into Eretz Yisrael, then it's a mitzvah ha-tzluya baretz. It's a very simple distinction that he makes. Chutz, there are two exceptions to the rule. Min shmatat ksafim v'shluach abadim. Shmitat ksafim, on the Shemitah year that all loans are forgiven, that is an exception to the rule and it applies ben b'chutz laretz, ben b'eretz Yisrael. Shluach abadim in the Yovel, when all the Abadim Ivrim go free, on the Yovel, that's also applicable, ben b'chutz laretz, ben b'eretz Yisrael. Even though those two mitzvot are only triggered after you enter into Eretz Yisrael, ben b'aretz, ben b'chutz laretz. Despite that fact, they are applicable both in Eretz Yisrael and chutz laretz. So here you have two exceptions to the rule, which is that these are mitzvot that even though they are triggered by entry into the land, nevertheless, they still are applicable even outside the land of Israel. Gemara says, I don't understand this. Hashmatat ksafim chuvat agufi. The fact that loans are forgiven have nothing to do with the land. Why would you even have a hava mina to suggest that shmitat ksafim should only apply in the land of Israel? Even though it's only triggered by entry into the land of Israel, there's nothing about shmitat ksafim that is tied to the land itself. It is a chuvat aguf. Anything that's a chuvat aguf should have application both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz. So why does he have to say this is an exception to the rule? It's not even a part of the rule. Lo nitzrucha ela l'ktanyo. We need it for the braita, like you're suggesting. The Tanya, Rabbi Omer, ze dvar shmita shemot. This is the way that shmita works. Shmot, you have to release. B'shtei shmitot akatuv midaber. Seems to be that the pasuk has two shmitot here. Achat shmitat akarka v'achat shmitat ksefim. One is dealing about desisting from working the land, and one is talking about the forgiveness of loans. Bizman shata mishamet karka, ta mishamet ksefim. The time that you desist from working the land, then you have forgiveness of the loans. Bizman shi ata mishamet karka, yata mishamet ksefim. At the time that you do not have shmita da karka, you do not have the forgiveness of the loans. You see that there is a correlation between shmita da karka and shmita ksefim. Rashi over here, and same with the Balei Tosafot, hold to their opinions that we saw back in the Gemara in Gittin as to what the Shemitah Rakarka is here. Rashi says Shemitah Rakarka is Shvit. Talking about Shemitah. Shemitah, you have Shemitah Rakarka, and the Shemitah Rakarka of Shvit is tied to the Shemitah Ksafim. So there's a correlation between Shemitah Rakarka on Shvit and Shemitah Ksafim on Shvit. The Balei Tosafot over here bring the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is the mainstream Shita in most of the Rishonim, which is that the Shemitah Rakarka we're speaking about here is not desisting from work in the seventh year, rather Shemitah Rakarka of the Yovel. It's referring to the return of lands to their proper owners in the Yovel. And it says, Bizman She Yovel Noheg, then Shemitah Ksafim is Nahug, which is the real Hekesh that the Yerushalmi brings down, which is that when the Yovel is in practice, then Shemitah is in practice. The Yovel is governed by the fact that the Pasuk says, Bizman Shechol Yoshve Aleha. When the time that all of its inhabitants are on the land, then Yovel is Doraita. So we know that Yovel has a limitation, which is that when Rov Bnei Yisrael are in Eretz Yisrael, then the Yovel is applicable. The Gemara Yerushalmi brings a Hekesh then between the Yovel and Shemitah. It says, just like by Yovel, it is applicable only when Rov Yoshve Aleha, so too Shemitah is only applicable when Yovel is applicable. So that's the Hekesh that is made. Basically, that the Rabbeinu Tam says that the Gemara here, when it brings this correlation between Shemitah Rakarka and Shemitah Ksafim, is referencing that Yerushalmi, and says, when Shemitah Rakarka, when the return of lands of the Yovel is applicable, then Shemitah Ksafim is applicable. Now, Shemitah Ksafim here doesn't just mean Shemitah Ksafim. It means Shemitah Karka and Shemitah Ksafim. It means Shemitah period is relevant. So when the Yovel is relevant, then Shemitah is relevant. That means when Yovel is Doraita, so too Shemitah is Doraita. For that reason, today, where we don't have Yovel Doraita, we also don't have Shemitah Doraita. Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Mi Derabanan. Because of the fact that the Yovel is not in practice, therefore, Shemitah is only midrabanan. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. You should know that the Rambam has a similar view, but a slight nuanced view, which is the Rambam clearly believes that Yovel and Shemitah Ksafim are connected. There's a question as to whether he also connects Shemitah Dakarka to that. It's a machloket in the Nosei Kelim of the Rambam, as to whether the Rambam believes that Shemitah Dakarka is governed by Yovel or not. And obviously the Nafkamina would be whether you can have Shemitah Doraita independent of Yovel Doraita. Can you have a Yovel that's not Doraita, and therefore Shemitah Ksafim is also only Midrabanan, but Shemitah Rakarka would be Doraita? Or does he hold like the Rabbeinu Tam here, which is when you have Shemitah Rakarka, meaning that Yovel is not in practice, so too Shemitah Ksafim is not in practice, and so too Shemitah Rakarka is not in practice, everything is Terabanan. That is the Shita of Rabbi, meaning that we're quoting a Braita about Rabbi. Rabbi says, Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is Midrabanan. Because of this Hekesh. The Hekesh between Shemitah Ksafim and Shemitah Rakarka. And again, the Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, the way that they disagree about what the Hekesh is over here, also disagree about what the Hekesh is in the Gemara and Gittin. For Rashi, he's missing a step in the logic. Rashi says, Shemitah Ksafim is connected to Shemitah Rakarka. Well, how do you know that Shemitah Rakarka doesn't apply now? Oh, because Shemitah Rakarka is Hukash Liovel. That piece, according to Rashi, is not found in the Gemara. It's not part of this Hekesh. On the other hand, for the Rabbeinu Tam, that's exactly what the Hekesh is telling you. The connection between Yovel and Shemitah. And Shemitah includes Shemitah Rakarka and Shemitah Ksafim. And that's what the Gemara is explaining to you, and that's why it's only Midr Rabbanan. Now, the next line in the Gemara, it's Machloket Rashi and Tosafot how to read the line. Rashi says the next line in the Gemara is a question. Tosafot says it's a statement in the next line in the Gemara. So now, the Gemara says, according to Rashi, Ve'ema, let us say, ve'malkum sh'ata mishamet karka, ata mishamet tsafim. In the place where there is shmita da karka, which is clearly only applicable inside of Eretz Yisrael, that place should be subject to shmita tsafim, should be subject to the forgiveness of the loans. Umakom she'enata mishamet karka, in the place where you don't have shmita da karka, you shouldn't have to have Shemitah Ksafim. Okay, Rashi L'shitato says, where you have Shemitah Dakarka, Shemitah only applies in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore Shemitah itself is not applicable in Chutzlaretz, so therefore Shemitah Ksafim should also not be applicable in Chutzlaretz. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk tells you, Ki Kara Shemitah L'Hashem, that you call out a Shemitah Hashem, Mikol Makom, anywhere that there's a Shemitah. Well, obviously, it can't be talking about Shemitah Dakarka, it's not applicable everywhere. So what is that speaking about? It must be speaking about Shemitah Ksafim, which is applicable everywhere. That's the way Rashi learns. He learns that as a question, and the Gemara says, Talmud Omar, and brings you the Pasuk to answer the question. Mm-hmm. Now, Tosafot doesn't like this because whenever the Gemara asks a question and brings the Pasuk as a proof, it says Amar Kra. Amar Kra is a response to a question. Talmud Omar is within an explanation of a statement you would say Talmud Omar, the Pasuk tells you. So it's not a question then, but rather a statement about what's happening, or explanation about what's happening. And therefore, Tosfot reads it like this. Instead of it being a question, it's rather the Gemara, or the Braita continuing and saying, Ema, b'makom sh'ata mishamet karka, ata mishamet tsafim. So let us suggest, right, not a question about why don't we say this, or why doesn't the Braita say this? That's what Rashi said. Why doesn't the Braita make this limud? So then we bring a puzzle to say that's why the Braita didn't do it. Tosfot says, this is prior to the Braita itself, saying, why wouldn't you say this? Or why don't we say this? Which is, Makom sh'ata mishamet karka, in the places where, according to Tosfot, it means the Yovel is applicable, which means only in Eretz Yisrael, where you return the land, ata mishamet safim. There you would have shmita safim. Makom sh'ata mishamet karka, ata mishamet safim. So you would have had a havamina like that, that maybe the Shemitah Ksafim should be connected to the return of the land, which is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. Talmud Lomar, that's what the pasuk tells you. Don't think this way. Ki kara Shemitah L'Hashem mikol makom. So one of them, according to Rashi, it's a real question, and the Gemara brings an answer. According to Tosafot, it's a rhetorical question, which is, the Gemara is proposing, why wouldn't you have said this? And the answer is, because I have a pasuk that tells you you don't say this. But not that it's an actual question, it's a method of exegesis, which is saying, this is the way to explain this braita, or why we wouldn't go down this path and make the Hekesh go further. You could have made the Hekesh go further and say, oh, just like Yovel and Shemitah are connected for their dinim, then maybe they should also be connected in their location. That's what the pasuk comes to undermine and say, no, that the pasuk says, don't think that way, or we can't think that way because the pasuk says that Shemitah applies everywhere. So how do I differentiate? We say that when the Yovel is Doraita, Shemitah is Doraita, but where the Yovel is in practice in Eretz Yisrael, then there in Chutzlaretz, Shemitah Ksafim is relevant and still applicable. And that's exactly what Rabbi Elazar Ben Shimon says, Chutz Mishmitat Hashmatat Ksafim. Even though you would add a Havamina to tie it to Yovel and to Shemitah Akarka, which is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, it stands independently and it's a Chuvat Aguf. That means in the time when Shemitah was Doraita or Yovel was Doraita, Shemitah Ksafim applied both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutzlaretz. And the same is true today, where we only practice Shemitah Ksafim Midrabanan. It's applicable both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz, which we spoke about, the issues of Shemitah Ksafim, where the Rishonim, you say the Rosh, speaks about the fact that he used to scream all the time and nobody listened to him, that Shemitah Ksafim applies in Chutz Laretz. And why is nobody doing a Prusbol in Chutz Laretz? It's applicable. And we spoke about the fact that today, thank God, there's been a resurgence where people are aware of Shemitah Ksafim and put together a Prusbol, even in Chutz Laretz. So now the Gemara says, the other exception, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says, is Shiluach Avadim. That Eved Ivri goes free during the Yovel. And the Gemara asks the same question again, Chuvat Agufi. What does that have to do with the Karka? There's nothing to do with Karka and releasing an Eved Ivri at the Yovel. So Sagadat Chmin Ol Vichtiv Kratim Dura Ba'aretz. It says, there is a connection in the Psukim. The Psukim say, Kratim Dura Ba'aretz, you will call out a call of freedom in the land. That call of freedom in the land includes both the return of the properties to their original owners, as well as the freeing of the slaves. So you see that there is some sort of correlation in the psukim between the aretz and the release of the slaves, even though it's not a direct correlation, but there's almost like a hekesh in the sense in the psukim. Besides the fact that it's a kratim drawer ba'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael, it sounds like that's where you make the drawer. Ba'aretz in, b'chutz la'aretz lo. It's applicable in Eretz Yisrael, not in chutz la'aretz. Tamal omar, yovel hi. It is a yovel, mikol makom. Similar type of drosha, which we have by Shemitah, which is when it says yovel hi, it means yovel no matter what. Meaning that yovel hi does not have any limitations associated with it, which means it's applicable worldwide. Same way that Karash Shemitah Lashem has no aretz associated with it, which means that there's a Shemitah everywhere. How do you have a Shemitah everywhere? That's only by Shemitah Ksafim. How do you have Yovel everywhere? That's by the release of the slaves. There are limitations. There is a Shemitah that only applies by aretz, and there's also a drawer that only applies by aretz. That's doing with the land. That means that the desisting from work is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. The returning of the lands to their original owners is only applicable in Eretz Yisrael. So now the Gemara says, so then, if that's true, that Yovel applies no matter what, meaning the freeing of the slaves applies everywhere, then what is the modification of Baretz? When there's freedom in Eretz Yisrael, there's freedom in Chutz La'aretz. In Dror Noeg Baretz, in Noeg B'chutz La'aretz. When there's no freedom in Eretz Yisrael, there's no freedom in Chutz La'aretz. Meaning that the mitzvah is still dependent on Eretz Yisrael, and it's dependent on the land. When Yovel is noeg in Eretz Yisrael, then freeing of the slaves in Chutz La'aretz is applicable. When there's no Yovel in Eretz Yisrael, then the freeing of the slaves is not applicable in Chutz La'aretz, even though it's a strange Havamina. The Havamina is that, even though there's no Yovel, noeg in Eretz Yisrael, that you still have to free the slaves in Chutz La'aretz. It's an amazing Havamina. But the Gemara is basing that on the fact that we just learned, that once you've established that freeing of slaves is independent of the Aretz, maybe it's so independent, that you don't even need the Yovel to be working in Eretz Yisrael for this to work. In the end, the Gemara says, no, reconnects it and says, when Yovel's d'oraita in Eretz Yisrael, then freeing of slaves in Chutz La'aretz is applicable. When there's no Yovel d'oraita in Eretz Yisrael, then there's no application of freeing the slaves in Chutz La'aretz. So the two are connected, but somewhat disconnected. They're connected in the fact that the trigger in all these cases is Eretz Yisrael. That's true by Shmitat Safim, and it's true here by the freeing of the slaves. That only when Yovel is Doraita in Eretz Yisrael is either one of those applicable in Chutz La'aretz, Midoraita. But when it's not applicable in Eretz Yisrael, Midoraita, that means it's only a Din Derabbanan in Eretz Yisrael. It's also only a Din Derabbanan in Chutz La'aretz. So now, Tanan Hotam. We have a Mishnah there. HaKadosh Asur Min HaTorah B'chol Makom. Chalosh is Asur from the Torah everywhere. So this is the Mishnah in Urla. It's a Stam Mishnah in Urla who supports Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah. That's why many of the poskim believe that the locha is like Rabbi Eliezer with Chodosh, that Chodosh has application in Chutz La'aretz, because here you have a Stam Mishnah in Urla that says, Chodosh Asur Min HaTorah B'chol Makom, anywhere. Urla is a surah outside of Eretz Yisrael, Halacha. Halacha means Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. V'akilayim Mi-Divrei Sofrim. And Kilei HaKerem is applicable, or Kilayim is applicable in Chutz La'aretz, Midrabanan. So that's what we saw in our Mishnah. That our Mishnah says, Chutz min Orla, o min HaKilayim. With the exception of Orla HaKilayim, which are mitzvot atuliyot ba'aretz, they are applicable outside of Eretz Yisrael. Here the Mishnah in Orla tells us, what does that mean they're applicable outside of Eretz Yisrael? He says, Alocha L'moch Misinai by Orla, and there is Alocha Midrabanan by Kilei HaKerem. And then we had Rabbi Eliezer to add for us Chadosh. The Chadosh also applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's based on this here. Again, the Stam Mishnah in Orla says that exactly. Chadosh is applicable b'chol makom, and that would be Midoraita. As opposed to the latter two, which are Halach L'Moshe Mi-Sinai and Divrei Sofrim, Chadosh is applicable min ha-Torah b'chol makom. One's written in the Torah, one is Halach L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. They might have the same level of restriction in Doraita. The other thing is, can you extrapolate from them? Something that's written in the Torah, you can darshan b'shloshes rei midota Torah. Something that's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai is a unique rule. You can't extrapolate from that rule at all. It's a unique rule. Say, my halacha. What does it mean that it's halacha? I'm Rabbi Yehuda Mashmol, hilchata midina. Not like I explained that it's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. Rather, hilchata midina. Here you have two explanations of what hilchata midina is. One possibility is that, like Rashi explains over here, nahu ga'am, hinhigu heim aleihem. The people decided to keep it. It was a voluntary isur that the people brought upon themselves and said, we're going to be noeg orla in Chutz La'aretz. That's one possibility. The other one is hilchata midina, means didina derabonon. is through the din derabbanan, and then you'd have to explain what the difference between that is and divrei sofrim, and part of that might be whether we punish for it, how much we enforce it. There might be differences between them. Ulam Rabbi Yochanan, which is the way that I read the Mishnah, because this is the way that we paskin, is halacha l'moshe misinai. Halacha here means halacha l'moshe misinai. Amalei ula Rabbi Yehuda. So ula, who quotes Rabbi Yochanan, that's the Masorah of Eretz Yisrael. Ula is quoting Rabbi Yochanan, which is in Eretz Yisrael, says it's halacha l'moshe misinai. Rabbi Yehuda quotes Shmuel in Bavel, who says that it is only dina, which means either dina means minhag or dina de sofrim. Bishmala di Ula says, according to my explanation, it's halacha l'moshe misinai. That means halacha l'moshe misinai. Hainu deshani lan ben safek or la de safek ilayim. I can explain to you why there's a difference in the din between a safek in orla and a safek in kilayim. So if we look in the Mishnayot, it says, it's not safek orla ba'aretz asur. If you have safek orla in Eretz Yisrael, that's a safek doraita, it's going to be asur. Besuria, Surya, as Rashi notes over here, was a kibush yachid, and therefore it doesn't attain the full status of kedushat aretz. So it's a in limbo. It has this in-between status. Then mutar. Because there it's a safek, it's mutar. So if you have a safek, there it's only a safek dirabanan. Safek dirabanan legula. Bechutz aretz, yored velokeach. You can go down and buy it. Ubavaj lo yer eno locate. As long as you don't see the guy picking it. So you can go to a orchard, and you're buying fruit. And in the orchard over there, you see there are young saplings and there are older trees over there. So even at the possibility that the young saplings are the rove, the majority of the trees there, and he's bringing out fruit to you, the guy, he's bringing out fruit from his orchard and he's selling them by the edge of his orchard. You can come and buy those fruits and just assume that they came from the older trees. Don't ask, don't tell. We don't want to know. As long as you didn't see him. As long as you didn't see him do it, and the fruits are just sitting there by the stand, you can assume it's the kula. Ve'ilu gabe kilayim, when it comes to kilayim, kerem, it's none. Kerem natua yerek. You have a vineyard that is full of vegetables, which you have a problem here of kilayim kerem. Ve'yerek nimkar chutzalo. And they're selling yerek, they're selling vegetables right outside. Again, he has the roadside stand, farm stand, right outside of this kerem that looks like it's got kilayim kerem in it. And by kilei kerem, both the kerem and the vegetables are asurim. Both are asurim. So you send them outside. Ba'aretz asur. If you see that in Eretz Yisrael, you have to assume it's asur. Kilei kerem is a dindo raita. Dindo raita, you have to have a safek, or even if there's any questions, we go to Chumrah. Besuria mutar, again in Surya it's mutar because it's only a quasi kedusha over there. So by case of safek, we're going to be matir. B'chutz la'aretz, yored v'lokate. You can go down and pick, as long as you don't do it personally. So Rashi interprets over here is that the goy can go down and pick it, as long as you don't pick it. But that means you could see him. As opposed to the orla, where you couldn't know about it. Don't ask, don't tell. Over here, it's just, don't do it. If he does it, it's fine. Others suggest is, your rate of locate means that you, as long as you don't pick it. If someone else picked it, fine. As long as you don't know for certain that it is kilei kerem, then you can eat it. So it's clearly there's a bigger kula by kilei hakerem than there is by orla. By orla, you can't know about it, you can't have seen it, can't know any of information. By the case of kilei hakerem, it's just, you can't do it yourself. Whether that means that the goy has to do it or means another Jew can do it, that's the machloket here. But just the only problem is that don't you physically pick it off the tree. Ela de didach. That's Ula says, according to me, I understand the difference. Because for kilei hakerem, it's only a divrei sofrim. It's only a din derabonon. So we're much more makil. By the case of orla, it is halacha l'moshe misinai. Halacha l'moshe misinai, we're more machmir, and therefore the safek where you can't know about it. The truth is that's a much bigger problem, because if it's halacha l'moshe misinai, it means it's doraita in the chutz laaretz. Of halacha l'moshe misinai, then it should be safek l'chumra. The Gemara is going to say, we're going to get there, is that the Gemara is going to say that that was the halacha l'moshe misinai. The halacha l'moshe misinai is badai asur. If it's vaday orla, it's asur. Safek orla is mutar. That is the halacha l'moshe misinai. But that way I can explain to you the difference in the Mishnayot, how they treat a safek. Because kilei hakerem is much more the kula, because it's a derabanan. Orla is the chumra, because it's a halacha l'moshe misinai. Eladidach, according to you, Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel, who say that they're both midrabanan, or one's a minog and one is derabanan, then nitnei ozev zeh yored v'lokeach, ozev zeh yored v'lokeit. Pick which one of them it is, but you should treat the safek the same way. Either both of them can buy, but you can't see it, Or you can see it, you just can't do it yourself. But you should have a consistent formulation of what the safek is. So it says, Hamar lei Shmuel the Rabbanan. Didn't Shmuel say to Rabbanan, Shmuel, who is the bar memra over here, says to Rabbanan, Snei, Ozev zeh yored lokech, Ozev zeh yored velokeit, en ochanami. He amends the Mishnayot to say, pick which one. You have to be consistent between these two Mishnayot because the din is on the same level. We're not talking about a Doraita and Derabonon. We're either talking about a Derabonon and Derabonon or a Minhag and Derabonon. The Kula should apply to both of them. Therefore, you should be consistent whatever the language is between these two Mishnayot. Now, the Gemara brings examples of Amoraim. Mar Brei Deravana, Matni Le Lukula. He amended the Mishnayot, Lukula, according to Shmuel Shita. Zevzeh Yurei Velokate, Ubavachalei Kot Biyad. He believed that there were only Dinei Derabanan, and therefore the Safek should be governed by the same rule. And he picked the Kula rule. The Kula rule was the one mentioned by Kilei Akerim, which is, Ubavachalei Kot Biyad. You can go down, you can have someone pick it for you. You can see it being picked, you just can't pick it yourself. Amalei Levi the Shmuel. Levi says to Shmuel, Aryoch, you lying. All right, so here Rashi all over Shas, Tosfot over Shas, describes or gives different reasons for why they called Shmuel Aryoch, the lion. The most likely is that he was a gibor in halacha, he was a gibor in Torah. He was a great sage, and they call him Aryoch, the great lion, the roaring lion. In other places in Shas, Rashi discusses the fact that by dinim, the halacha is like Shmuel, and therefore Aryoch says that you are the lion or the strong one when it comes to dinim, but not by isurim. And that's, there's a conjugation of the word that shows you that by dinim, yes, by isurim, no. Again, different explanations, but it's clear it's a nickname for Shmuel, but a positive accolation for Shmuel. Here you can either read this, sapekli or sapekli vaneichul. Provide it for me and I will eat it, or sapekli. Make it into a safek for me so that I can eat it. What he was saying to Shmuel is, you pick it, I eat it. So that way, being exactly what was described in the Mishnah, you can't do it yourself, but someone else can do it for you. So he's saying to me, either you provide it for me, or he's saying to make it into a safek for me because you'll pick it and I won't know for sure that it's that way. Okay, either reading. Either they supplied to each other, or they made it a safek for each other, that they made it that it was mutar to eat the kilayim based on the Lashon HaMishnah. Meaning that here we have corroboration of these Amoraim practicing what's said in the Mishnah over here, which means that if you are like Shmuel and you keep the din consistent, it means that they kept the din consistent and they are yored velokate. They allowed people to go down and pick it as long as it's not you yourself who is picking it. Also evidence of the fact that it seems like other Jews were picking it. Not that a goy was picking it, but here it seems like Amoraim were doing it for each other. Unless you read it as sapeg, means provided for me, means get a goy to pick it for me. But either way, it's everybody's leaning the kula over here. So if you believe that the explanation here is like Shmuel, then it would seem that we would be consistent in paying yored v'lokeit. We'd have the kula in both cases. Amrei harifei de pumpedita, the sharp ones of pumpedita. As Rashi notes over here, that's Eifa Bavyime B'nei Rochva de Pumpedita. So Rochva had two kids who were very sharp and B'nei Torah in Pumpedita, and they were known as the Harife of Pumpedita. Ein Orla b'chutz laretz. No such thing as Orla in chutz laretz. But here, this is even a bigger Hakala than we've seen before. We have three opinions now. We have one opinion that Orla is Alocha L'Moshe M'Sinai, that's Rabbi Yochanan Shita. We have Shmuel Shita, which is Orla is either a minhag, or a minhag midrabanan. And now we have an opinion of the Harifei de Pumpedita. There's no arla in chutz laretz. They have three different opinions about what the application, what the din of arla is in chutz laretz. And again, we'll continue with this discussion in tomorrow's daf. And we're going to stop here. 9 lines down on the top of Lamed Tet Amud Aleph.